Good morning. This is John Patika Jr. with the Patika Wealth Management Group, and welcome to our first call of 2023. I'm here alongside our senior member and my father, John Patika Sr. These calls are recorded on our Patika Wealth Management podcast. It's located on our website and also iTunes and Spotify. You could access it there in case you missed any of our previous ones or just wanted to have a replay of the one that we're at now, that we're talking about now. So it's on demand for you. But anyway, why don't we just get started? And as of the recording of this call, you know, the global elites are meeting over in Davos, Switzerland, where they flew in on their 1,500 or so private jets to talk about how we could cut our carbon emissions, and more importantly, what they think about 2023 and economically in the global economics. So I'm going to turn it over to Senior, who I believe rode in on his bike today to cut his carbon emissions.
Yeah, real
funny. So Senior, what do you think the market's going to do in 2023?
Okay, getting right at it. You know, it's always a fool's errand to try and guess the number that the stock market's going to end 12 months from now. So what we like to do is to come up for a base case for 2023 and then adjust as we go throughout the year. Consumer is 70% of our economy. I need everybody to think that through to understand the base case, that the consumer spending is 70% of our economy. So the unemployment rate, point number one, the unemployment rate's around 3.5%. We may get into the fours or even as high as five if you get into a recession. But that means 95 or 96% of the work or the people are working. And when I went to school, that's considered full employment. I don't know why that wouldn't be considered now. Now, if people are confident, point number one, if people are confident that they can find a job if they get let go or laid off or whatever, then they're more apt to spend money and buy stuff. So 70% of the spending in our economy is consumers. If they're confident they can find a job, they'll buy stuff. And the unemployment rate's around 3.5. Could it go to 5? And that won't break our economy. I believe one of the keys to this is the baby boomers. The baby boom generation has 10,000 people every day now turning 65 years old. Now, it's been that way for the last 7 years, 10,000 a day turning 65. And it will be for the next 13 years, 65. So just think about this. If you give me this, that the leading edge, maybe the 72-year-olds are retiring. I just say they're starting to retire. You take 365 days times 10,000 a day, you have 3.6 million people that are retiring every day. And I know it's a lot more than that. But that's an example. It's the book I read 20-some years ago, they called the baby boom generation a pig going through a python. It's just this massive after World War II population, and it's where a lot of, if not most of, our skilled labor is now. So if the unemployment can stay reasonable, people can stay confident, they will spend money and buy stuff. That's base case number one.
So every time you turn on the TV, it doesn't matter what media outlet you look at, CNN, Fox News, CNBC, Bloomberg, you know, everyone is talking about a recession. You know, we're getting into a recession this year. Do you feel like we're going to be getting into a recession this year?
Well, look, you could easily have a recession. You know, it depends who you talk to, whether we are or not. I know this, there's no free ride for printing $5 trillion. The ramifications of that are unknown because it's never happened before, anything near this. So you print $5 trillion, you give it away into the economy, and let's see what happens, right? And there's, to me, you can't get away free from that. So I think, yeah, probably a recession, depends how you define it. But I don't think you'll be anywhere near like the 70s style recession where we had 10 and 11% unemployment, prices exploding up, energy prices went off the table. And it was, they used to have a misery index they'd measure. I don't think we get to that. But unfortunately, the person who gets hurt the most is the lower end of the wage scale. The people that we work with, the people with the most savings and investments, they've done actually pretty well since COVID started. You go back to 3 years to start this business cycle, you're talking portfolios are up since the beginning of that. Home values, they're all up since that. You know, it's unfortunate. Mortgages are probably 6.5 or so right now for 30-year fixed on a new house. But most of our clients, if not all, refinanced, you know, maybe 3% range if you have a mortgage at all. And then finally, the biggest thing I see this year is you can finally get interest on your savings account. That's a big deal right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, money markets and CDs are actually paying something now. I know we talk to a lot of people over here at UBS that are investment strategists and economists, and there was an interesting meeting we had not too long ago when we looked at the different, you know, historical, what happens to the market and in history of recessions. And it was kind of interesting that 11 of the last 12 recessions, the S&P 500 actually bottoms about six months before the recession is over. So market timing is incredibly difficult. But let's transition a little bit to interest rates, speaking of higher interest rates and inflation. And could you give us your thoughts there, Senior?
Yeah, I will. But first on the inflation, a lot of people will say, after, if we do get into a recession, that we should, you know, hey, let's invest after the recession or something along those lines. But the fact of the matter is you have to stay pretty fairly invested because you can't tell when it's over. How do they determine when a recession is over? They're going to look backwards probably 2 months. How do you know it's over? You look forward. And the market's going to look forward 6 months. That's why the market always bottoms out before the recession is over. So it's tough to time. You have to just do your investing and due diligence. And we'll talk more about that. But interest rates, look, Powell's probably going to raise them another 0.5% on February 1st. The people who guess these things get pretty good, pretty accurate when it comes to the very near-term meetings. They signal what they're going to do. Maybe one or two more times, if you ask me, which you are, I wouldn't be surprised if it ended a lot sooner than people think. And the reason is, you see, how they measure inflation, they take a basket of goods and services from the same month, the year before, and they take it and compare it to that basket now. So basically, they get $1,000 worth of goods and service from, say, last August, and they compare it to this August, the same $1,000 worth of goods and services, and then you can determine if inflation went up or down year over year. Well, look what was happening last year. From January, I think oil was maybe $100 and $102 a barrel, and it went all the way up steadily. Until March, it was $127 a barrel. Gas was well over $5 a gallon around here. And right now, oil is about $82 a barrel. Wheat is way down. Corn is down. Coffee is down. Aluminum is down. Most metals are down. Used cars. You're not seeing cargo ships stacked up off the port of Los Angeles like you were a year and so ago. The supply chain is eased. They got all the chips they want now. You're seeing cars on car lots. Some things, of course, are tough to bring wages down. You know, I know restaurant people, so they close at 9 instead of 10 o'clock if they want to save wages. You're seeing that in the statistics that the hours worked have come down. So when you do the comps, the businesses have already reacted, and I just wouldn't be surprised if he stopped early. Because, you know, they say, well, China is going to open up. True, that's a big deal. But also opening up their manufacturing and sending stuff. So I think that you could end a little sooner. The market is dying to have him stop raising rates. So we'll see.
Okay. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about a hot topic nowadays, and that's politics. You know, we do have a debt ceiling issue that we're about to get into. And we also have the midterm elections over, thank goodness. Now we have a divided government. But could you talk a little bit about debt ceiling and the state of our government as far as Congress right now?
Yeah, look, I've been through so many of these debt ceiling fights. They really started bad. And at least my memory is Clinton era. There was a couple of bad ones, a couple of weeks long pizza parties at night. Got him in trouble. This might be really nasty based on what you saw to get McCarthy, Leader McCarthy, elected. Maybe June or July, they're going to run out of money. They'll start off by shutting down some things like national parks. They'll shut it down, and then they'll put a Boy Scout on TV crying he couldn't go to the national park. And this is like the Super Bowl for the media. That non-essential workers will be told to stay home, I'm guessing. Then, of course, they'll get paid back. They'll put them on TV. You're going to hear about the debt being downgraded. That happened last time, S&P, I think it was, maybe Moody's too. And then they're going to talk about default on the debt. That's going to really shake people up if it goes to the brink, like it has done several times in the last 15 years. So if they go to the brink, people are going to get scared. Market won't like it. And you know what we'll do? We'll look for opportunities because they have to get a deal. We'll have no country if you don't get a deal. They will get a deal. It won't be pretty. And look, the only thing we can do is look for opportunities. You can't time it. You can't do any of those things. But when you see something that pulls back for the wrong reason, that's when you do it. So absolutely, they will have to do it. It'll look bad. We'll look for opportunities the way I see it.
So let's transition to another topic that everyone needs to power up their cars and heat and cool their homes. Let's talk a little bit about energy. And could you give us our thoughts after a huge performance last year? The energy sector did very, very good. But what are your thoughts as far as energy going forward?
Well, look, I still think oil prices, oil and gas prices will stay up. Not gasoline, gas, natural gas. I think they'll stay up. There's a lot of energy companies that are going to do well, in my mind. You know, China will reopen again. I think they use 19 million barrels a day when things are going. They're going to get back up there. Travel is way up in climbing. And frankly, there's no reason to believe that, you know, government officials won't continue to make policy errors. You know, I said this the other day. What do you mean policy errors? I can go on all day. Take Germany. That's one of my favorite. You know, back in 2010, after the tsunami in Japan destroyed a 1960s era nuclear power plant, they vowed to eliminate all 17 of their nuclear power plants and build a pipeline to Germany, and I mean to Russia. Let's get our gas from Russia and heat with gas. They had closed 16 out of 17. The other was scheduled to be closed this year, and they delayed that a little bit. That's a policy error. In December, I think 2 weeks out of the 4 weeks in December, they burn more coal to heat up their homes than China and India did. China or India did. You know, there are several weeks this winter, they're paying 10 times more than they should have for energy because of policy errors. And that money could have went elsewhere. Take Biden. I mean, he sold it was like 220 million barrels, but they did some exchanges with oil companies. Basically, they sold 180 million barrels from the strategic reserve. They received $17 billion, and this is from the Wall Street Journal. This was a good article a couple weeks ago. So they got $17 billion in return for the 180 million barrels. And they said they're going to buy it back at $70 a barrel. And that will provide a floor under the price of oil so that oil companies will keep drilling. It makes sense. You know, you got a price at 170, it's got a floor. What made real sense until they took $12 billion out of the energy department from that money, out of the 17, and put it in that new omnibus bill they passed. So they left just $4 billion in the energy department to buy back oil at 70. That'll buy like 50 million barrels or so. And Congress will have to issue them the new money if they are to buy the remainder. So good luck with that. That's policy errors. Bottom line, energy companies, they overdeveloped back in 2005 and 6 when fracking first came online. And they drove the prices down of oil to about 25, 28. Natural gas was just a waste. There was so much of it. And then 2008 recession came. They capped a lot of those wells. And a lot of those companies went under and were gobbled up by bigger companies. So I think they're taking advantage of those resources right now. They're not going to overdrill. They're not. They already stated this, Exxon and Chevron's statements. They're not going to overdrill. They're not going to overproduce. They're not building refineries. So basically, they're turning the money back to the shareholders. I see that continuing, and that's a good thing for energy. We're looking for investments. I see that as a good thing for energy.
Well, continuing to look forward as far as the investment front, you know, we've talked about energy, but what are investors supposed to be doing? What are they supposed to be invested in for 2023, bearing all the things that you were just talking about, potential recession, debt ceiling, showdown? Now, what should an investor do going forward?
For one, we still like energy. I'm not crazy that we're going to overdo energy, but I still like energy. They pay good dividends for the most part. We look at profit margins. You know, there's profit margins might be tight this year, but they're not for everybody. Take for example, some of the raw materials that are coming down. Take wheat. Everybody knows what a box of cereals done. They shrunk the size of a box of cereal. They raised the price. And now all of a sudden the wheat is coming down. And I doubt very much that they're lowering the price of cereal at this point. You take lumber. Lumber had a complete round trip over the last couple of years. I think it started out below $300 for 1,000 board feet, went up to about $1,700. Dollars a thousand board feet. Now it's back down to four something. And I paid $51 for a sheet of plywood about a week ago. And so the stores are very slow to lower the price. Coffee beans were the actual bean was at an all-time low early last year. Then they got the rains or whatever they needed and the price went up. Well, most coffee people who sell you coffee raise their prices 40, 50, 60%, and you're not seeing that come down. ConAgra, you know, they make all these Hunt's ketchup and all these things. They raised prices, I think it was in the fourth quarter, three times. And they asked, it caught my attention because they asked the guy, I think he's the president, you know, what do you guys see as prices? We don't think we'll need to raise them in the fourth quarter. Yeah, I hope not. I think it was five times last year they raised prices. So a lot of that stuff's going on. Now, look, we're here to find those values, those companies that are going to make money next year, or this year, I should say, extra profits with maybe the same sales. Aluminum's another thing. A lot of the metals coming down a lot. So you could really see some companies really hit their earnings because this has been going on now for several months. And that's what we're really looking for. Another thing is banks, investment companies. Back in 2008, when we had the Great Recession of 2008, Dodd-Frank was a law that came out after that. And part of that law was increasing the reserve requirements for investment institutions, so they have money for a rainy day or a disaster. And they do these stress tests on them all the time, and they're all passing it. Well, and I know from UBS, it's horrible what has happened to them when no interest on their reserves. So they were getting a tenth or two tenths, because it's very restricted what you can own in your reserves. You might own a 6-month treasury or a 3-month, or it may go out to 9 months corporate A1. Well, you're getting 0.2%. Well, guess what? All of a sudden, you're getting 4% on that money. I saw Bank America and all these other banks reserve profits, billions of extra profits on money that's just sitting there. So you look at it, I mean, it's billions. I don't want to go into each bank and get them wrong on a recorded line, but dramatic. Insurance companies, same thing. I think that they're going to print money. You can talk about just their basic business will do well too. If you're getting 6.5% on a mortgage and you're selling it off, you're raising that money at whatever you need to raise it in the bank accounts, much less than 6. So their spreads are dramatically better. So you can make some money on some old bricks and mortar things.
Yeah, and I know, just to sum it up, you know, as far as our investment philosophies, we do believe in some of these longer term themes, you know, like energy and energy infrastructure. You know, we started investing a little bit into the electric grid build out in North America. And we like dividend growth type value companies and income type of investments. But Senior, I'm going to turn it back to you as we're kind of running lower on time. Could you give us any final thoughts before we start to close out this call?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound silly, but you expect the unexpected. Every year, our whole lives, everybody on this call, something unexpected happens. You know, normally, if you expect something to happen, the old saying is it's predictable, it's preventable. Well, I didn't predict COVID. You didn't predict $5 trillion being printed out, you know, on January 1st of those years. We didn't predict last year that the Fed would raise their rates the fastest in history. You didn't predict the Russian war. You might have thought it might have happened. Every year there's stuff like that. So what you have to do, and what we do, is, you know, we own companies with sterling balance sheets. You have to be able to take a gut punch, because they're coming. They come every year. So you have to be able to take a gut punch. You have to have good corporate management so that you can navigate these problems, because if you can't adjust, then you're not a good manager. Finally, I think, you know, cash flow is key. We love dividends and interest, and this might be the first time in 10 years that we're going to be able to capture some money for our clients in interest. We were always scrambling trying to find interest. It was interesting. I had Bloomberg on early this morning, and the guy's saying, "And what am I going to do with my 401k? The 60-40 was a disaster last year. It was the worst in the history of the stock market. 60-40 is 60% bonds, 40%.
60% stocks, 40% bonds.
Yeah, thanks for correcting.
Yeah, no problem.
So it was the worst year ever. And he's buying my 401k's in there. What should I do now? And the other guy's going, "Hey, you know what you do? You stay there." All of a sudden, you got 4.5% 1-year CDs that you had nothing to start the year. So you can't take last year and extrapolate that into this year. Every year is different. We have our base case. I explained that to you. I think we're going to be okay. Maybe a lot better than people think. If you stick to bricks and mortar, sterling balance sheets and cash flow, then you'll do fine. So pretty much that's it from me. And why don't you take it from here,
Jim? Yeah, no, absolutely. And if anyone's interested, you know, just on a couple one-off things, like, you know, cash that's sitting in savings accounts, you know, the more conversations we're having that banks are not adjusting and actually paying out that higher interest where they should be in money markets. So we've been building out, you know, private savings accounts and money market accounts to get some type of return for your cash. So if you're interested, we're more than happy to talk to you about that. We've also been reviewing a lot of old insurance policies. Believe it or not, with the interest rates going up, a lot of these are outdated. So we're doing full reviews with our insurance consultants. Also, the omnibus bill that Senior referenced earlier on, you know, that really has a big impact as far as people's retirement plans. And there's a lot of stuff in there. We have a white paper that kind of explains all of the new things that they added, things like, you know, in 529 plans, you know, at a certain point, they could actually, the beneficiary could roll that into their Roth IRA, which is a new thing. And they're pushing the RMD ages back. There's some stuff in there about Roth 401ks at work. So if you're interested in that white paper, feel free to reach out to our team. We'll shoot that over to you. Our retirement planning team did a really good job. And that just about concludes our call today. And if there's anything at all that you need, please reach out to us. Let's have the conversation. If you have any friends or family that just need any type of advice or counsel in regards to their financial goals, use us as a resource. We're here for you. And I hope everyone has a great weekend, and we'll be talking soon. Take care.